Hi, my name's Izzy. I'm an addict. I haven't been on Zoom for quite a while, and I'm very unmanageable. I've only just got back, quickly jumped in the shower. I was drying my hair after the meeting has started, but it's not quite dry yet. I haven't thought about what I'm going to say or anything. I've had a busy day, and I like calling it busy. Some may call it unmanageable. So 25 minutes. Wow. I've done a 25 minute one before and it didn't seem too long, but I think in my head it seems longer than it is. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I'm originally from Suffolk, a town called Woodbridge. It's quite a small town. Was born, my mum and dad, they're not married, and they, you know, I grew up in an abusive household. My brother was born when I was three, and he is extremely disabled. He's got Duchenne muscular dystrophy. When he was 10, he was in a wheelchair full time. As a kid, I hear it all the time, I didn't fit in. I had no friends. I didn't feel safe at home. I didn't feel safe at school. I got bullied a lot. I didn't have any friends and just didn't like me. I would latch on to my mum as support, but then, you know, she couldn't support me. She couldn't even support herself with my dad. I was kind of, didn't really have much attention as a kid or anything like that. I mean, I craved attention, but when it was given to me, I was uncomfortable because I didn't know what to do with it. I wasn't used to it. And that's still with me today. Like sharing in meetings, I want attention, but I don't know. Yeah, it's uncomfortable when I'm sharing in a meeting and everyone's actually listening to me, and it's just not normal to me. My mum, when I was in about year two, my mum ran away from my dad's, went to my her parents. I went mute in year two. I don't quite remember it, but I was mute. My mum took me to like some childhood mental health, and they just said to me that I'll grow out of it, and then just, you know, I just left. And I was living with my grandparents. I got really fond of my granddad. My granddad had all the time in the world for me. I was his special person. I felt comfortable around him. He's a big fan of sports, so when I'd show up, he'd turn his programs off and we'd go out and play football or whatever. He was a yes man. He couldn't say no to me. And I guess then I learned how to manipulate, really. And then my dad took my mum to court, and so then I could go see my dad every other weekend, which I did for years. And I absolutely hated it. You know, my dad's an alcoholic, and he didn't physically or sexually abuse me, but there was definitely a lot of mental abuse. I'd kind of prefer him to hit me, because then I could kind of identify what had happened. But it was, you know, every weekend I'd come home crying and plead my mum, please don't get me, let me go back there. And every weekend I did. I didn't listen in school. I just hated it. And didn't really feel understood. You know, school didn't really do anything with me. I never felt understood. I felt different. You know, now today I can see that I was an addict. I believe I was an addict. I know I was an addict way before I picked up a drink or drug, you know, in my in my behaviours. And I know that drinking drugs is only one symptom. You know, my disease manifests in all sorts of areas, which I'll get onto in a bit. But high school, I again, I was bullied. You know, I made one friend, and it was very shaming. I wasn't allowed to see that friend in public because she wanted to be cool and I wasn't cool. And then in year eight, I got a friend who, you know, I was. She just used to push me around, and I used to take whatever because I was with her. And year eight, yeah, it kind of went on like that. And then in year nine, I started self-harming and I developed an eating disorder, which was noticeable. You know, those things were just ways of me trying to kind of explain how I was feeling, but I couldn't really explain it with words. It was that self-hatred, and that was the kind of behaviors that I learned, how to cope with my feelings. Any rejection, any feeling, even if it's a good feeling, I would do that as a way of coping. And it's obviously physical. You know, I was losing weight, you know, I had scars on myself, so I got help. And I've been in the mental health system, if you call it a system, for many years. You know, I was put on antidepressants when I was 14, and then I made lots of friends, like real friends. You know, I came home one day and I said, "Mum, I smiled at someone," and they smiled back at me, you know, because I hated the world. I wouldn't smile at anyone. I was angry at the world. I thought the world did me some sort of disservice, and I hated it. I hated myself. I hated everyone in the world. And, you know, I was a fantasist. So I'd go around friends' houses and wish that their parents were my parents. And I would read books and fairy tales and stuff, and just anything to get myself out of me. I got some real friends, you know, who I'm still friends with today. And then kind of GCSEs came with those friends. At that time became drinking. So at that time I moved into my dad's house because my dad would supply me with any drink that I asked for. Cigarettes, I used to sell cigarettes to my friends. I managed to get my GCSEs. I managed to get all of my GCSEs, even though I was drinking and drugging a lot. There was a party every weekend, and a lot of the times it was party around my house because my dad would let me do that. But, you know, the drugs, you know, trying all different drugs. But I remember the first thing I tried was alcohol. And I remember saying to my mum, why don't people do this all the time? And I was all right, you know, that confidence. I didn't mind the world. I didn't mind talking to people. I didn't mind who I was when I was drinking. And then the party drugs came in, you know, the raves and the coke and the ket. And I loved it. After my GCSEs, yeah, there was a big summer of just music festivals, parties, drugs, drink, all of it. And I got into a relationship with a drug dealer, which was great because I didn't have to buy anything. Now I can kind of see that as me using sex to, you know, sell myself. And by the time A-levels came, all my friends went back to school, and I carried on. My dad, I used to drink two bottles of wine every night with my dad, and I didn't used to go to school. I failed my first year of A-level. I got one AS level, managed to manipulate the headmistress to retake, so I did retake. But still, it was just, you know, I got caught drink driving when I was 17. So I lost my car when I was 17. So then I started going and taking my mum's, well, my brother's mobility car when I was drunk. And, you know, got caught a second time. I've probably done it about 50 times, but I got got caught a second time when I just turned 18, went to prison. And, you know, that was a kind of eye-opener. You know, I didn't belong and I really felt like ashamed to be in there, but I just managed to get along with it. You know, there was no access to drink and drugs, so I kind of, you know, I there was structure in there and I didn't mind it. You know, I got fed, I got healthy, I went to the gym. I didn't see the drink or the drugs as a problem as to why I was in there. It was because it was any other reason, you know, trying to excuse the behaviour. I didn't get arrested drink driving because I was drink driving. I got arrested because my lights weren't on, or I crashed because, you know, the tree was in the way or something like that, you know, and got out of there and I just carried on drinking and using. I got caught again. Well, overall, I got caught 6 times, went to prison twice. I should have gone the third time, but I got tagged at my dad's house, which, you know, my dad isn't a particularly nice character to live with. And even when I was allowed out of the house, he would lock the door. And, you know, I found ways and means, as they say, to get more by jumping out of windows and getting, you know, I found loads of ways to get more. And, you know, the drug dealer would throw the drugs up to my window and then I'd throw down the money. And, you know, then he caught on to that, took my card away. It was just, you know, he was trying to save my life. I hated it at the time because that when I had that first one, that obsession would come over me and I wasn't physically able to go out and get more. That whole night was painful. I'd preferred just to not have anything and then cluck than to have one and then have that obsession. And I moved in with my friend's parents. These are the parents that when I was younger, I wished that they were my family. Moved in with them. I basically became one of their children. They tried to get me away from my dad. They tried to get me to stop drinking. They didn't know about the drugs. I managed to hide that really well from all my family, actually. And I was living in my friend's bedroom while she was at uni. I was, you know, they've got a B&B. I was their child. They treated me like I was their child. I'd call them mum and dad. And after about a couple of months, they went away to a wedding and they asked if I could look after their dog because they have an outhouse. So they asked if I can look after the dog in the outhouse. I was like, yeah, sure. Planned to go and stay at another friend's house, but let myself into their house. I knew how to get in because my friend showed me without a key, drank their booze and stole her brand new car and crashed it. And then she, you know, ever since that was probably about 4 years ago. And, you know, I haven't spoken to her yet since. And that, you know, they could kind of see, they saw what I was like when I was clean and they couldn't understand it. They were like, why do you do these things? Why do you keep on carrying on doing these things even after all the consequences? I go, I don't know. And I really didn't know at the time. I didn't know what an addict was. I didn't know what I suffered with. I just thought I was a bad person. Now I can understand that as me being powerless. And yeah, you know, along the way, you know, I've been in hospitals, institutions, all of that, cracked my head open. I was found with a pool of blood outside my mum's house. And, you know, none of these things made me stop. It never got bad enough until, you know, I went into recovery when I was 21. And, you know, I was on an alcohol treatment requirement, but I was really drunk there, and I actually used their phone to call up and book myself into a treatment centre in complete blackout. I don't remember doing it, but the next morning my mum said, are you ready? I'm going to come pick you up in 10 minutes. Are you ready to go? And I go, well, where are we going? I said, we're going to treatment, you know, I've agreed to pay for treatment. And that whole treatment center, I thought that she forced me in there. It's not until I kind of spoke to her and I realized that, well, it was actually me that did it. Went through that treatment center. You know, I'm all right when I'm taken away from society, when it's not an option. You know, as soon as there is any kind of way to get it, I'm going to take that and I'm going to run with it. Which it happened in the treatment center. I did 28 days. You know, looked all healthy. Didn't think I needed the fellowship meetings. Didn't think I needed anything. I'm clean. I'm all right. I don't need this help. You know, I thought I'd go in there and I'd come out and I'd be able to control my drinking and using and my life will be fine because I'm only a problem drinker. You know, with problem drinkers and users, they put down the substance and then the problems go. Whereas with me, I put down the substance and I realised why I took it in the first place. My problems come up. Anyway, after the 28 days, I got moved into like a second stage, and my first opportunity, I went down to the shop, stole a couple of bottles of wine and, you know, drank them. I got kicked out. I got kicked out on the Friday, and I just went mad for a couple of nights. And that time I pleaded for my mum to take me back to treatment. She drove me 3 hours to take me back to treatment. And that time, that's where I wanted to be. You know, I didn't want to live with my dad anymore. I had enough, and I wanted to be in a safe place. A bit like when I was in prison, you know, I didn't really mind it because I was away. I was away from myself. I was away from everything that I was blaming my drinking and using on, because I did blame it on my dad a lot. If it wasn't for him for buying me it, well, if it wasn't for me for asking for it, I've got to take responsibility for that. And, you know, anyway, went to treatment for 28 days, then went back to the place that I relapsed in for another 28 days. And then my counsellor asked if I wanted to, she didn't want me to go back to my mum, to my dad's basically, and she asked if I wanted to move to London. So I moved into London. I went to a treatment centre, did all the things that I wasn't meant to do. I was 21 at the time and I was angry at the world. I was angry at being in a treatment centre. You couldn't tell me what to do because I knew best. I got into a relationship. Actually, I went to 3 rehabs and I got in 4 rehabs and I got into 4 different relationships, partly because they said don't get into a relationship. So you can't can't tell an addict not to do something. So yeah, I got into and actually, you know, it worked out. I'm still with the guy today. I don't recommend it. I see why the suggestion is there. Suggestions, no, I wouldn't do suggestions. I wouldn't do anything. I thought because the fact that I'm not using anymore and I've moved to London and I'm looking all right. I've got a bit of money in my bank, bought a new pair of shoes. I'm all right. I don't need this lot anymore. And it kind of carried on like that. I went to a dry house and now kind of looking back, I was kind of clinging on. I was doing the bare minimum and I was unhappy because of it. You know, I was clean, but I was definitely not. I wouldn't say that I was in recovery because I worked the steps just to tell people that I worked the steps. My nickname from my sponsor was Yeah But. I would not do, you know, I was kind of like don't do what she does, otherwise, you know. And I ended up relapsing. I relapsed when I was 20 months. I moved out of the supported housing, got my own flat, had a job, got a job in the treatment centre that I went through. You know, I'm all right. I don't need this lot anymore, forgetting that that's the only reason why I'm here in the first place. You know, I wouldn't pray, I wouldn't do gratitude lists, I wouldn't do anything. And, you know, and the inevitable happens, I relapsed. And, you know, my pride when coming back was massive. My low self-esteem, very low, because I did little work on myself. And my pride was massive. Coming back into the rooms and saying that I've relapsed to clients that I used to have, but that's just all false. That's false pride, you know. I don't want to say, I didn't need to relapse. It would have been a lot easier if I didn't. Thank you. Cheers. But you know, for me, it's kind of, you know, I've learned a lot, and I'm back, and you know, I first came in, I'd look around the room, listen to people, and I'd be like, well, it hasn't got that bad, so I'm all right. I haven't used that specific drug, I haven't done that, I haven't done this. And I ended up using, you know, with that partner that I got into rehab, and I ended up using the drugs that I said that I've never tried. And you know, I didn't inject, but I know that that would have been a get. You know, I know that, you know, I'm up for anything. And I got suicidal when I was using. I didn't think recovery worked because I didn't work it, and you know, I didn't want to be using anymore. But I got to that place where I was, that place of despair, that I couldn't do it anymore, and I needed to get out. You know, I wasn't strong enough to. I think it would have been easier for me to take my life, but I didn't do it. You know, I came back into the place where I knew that would help me, which is the rooms, and I didn't think that I'd be able to do it from just the rooms. You know, I wanted to go into treatment, but I wasn't able to do that. I didn't want to call my mum to say, can I have some money for treatment? But I was able to do it from the rooms, I think, because kind of this time around, I could have used, you know, I still had money in the bank, so I could have used if I wanted to, but I kind of chose not to. You know, I was completely powerless after that first one. I couldn't stop, and it wasn't until I was crying whilst doing it, and I was not enjoying it, that I had to, you know, kind of take stock and think, you know, what do I want from my life? Do I really want this? No, I don't. So I kind of got myself to a meeting, got shared in a meeting, you know, reached out to people that were there for me before, and kind of made it back. And you know, it's been tough. I'm not gonna lie, like having to get a white, just even getting a white, I think it was easy for me to get a white curing, but it's like, you know, well done. Yeah, but I was this amount. It doesn't matter what clean time I have. It really doesn't. You know, I was miserable when I was nearly 2 years, and 2 years isn't a majorly long period of time anyway. And, you know, I've learned to keep it in the day. I've only got today, and if it's a clean day, then it's a successful day in my eyes. And you know, I've worked on myself. I've just read out step three, and I have got that conscious contact. I want to say again, I never had it before. I didn't take it seriously, and you know, that is the reason. That is one of the reasons that I'm here today, I believe, because when I couldn't get back. That's what I did. I prayed to something else outside of me, and I made it back. I got, you know, one day, went to 5 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, and I feel like I'm kind of back in myself again, but kind of better, because I've had that kind of new experience of it. And you know, I need to keep consistent, because I know my disease manifests in my head, and it tells me that I don't have a disease. It tells me that I don't need you lot. I don't need to answer the phone. I don't need to pick up the phone. I don't need to go to a meeting. I don't need to share my shit. I don't need to go do a gratitude list. Well, actually, you know, I'm the one that's going to suffer if I don't. And it's not, you know, it's a suggestion. It's not like a, it's not a chore for me anymore. It comes naturally. You know, and I've met so many new people, you know, along the way. And I've got some close people in my life today, some close women and men, you know, because men is important to me as well, to reach out to, that know my darkest secrets, and I'm able to be completely honest with them. You know, I'm able to be in silence with them if I don't feel like talking, you know. I don't try and please people to like me anymore, you know, because I'm all right myself, thanks acknowledged. But you know, I'm able to be in the lives of my family and my friends, and you know, I'm able to kind of live a normal life, which I thought that I would never, you know, be able to do. Like, I'm able to keep up a flat, I'm able to keep relationships with people, you know, and the list goes on. But it's not necessarily external things, you know. I'm all right with me at the moment, and you know, that's all I could ask for, really. And you know, if you're new, then please, you know, keep coming back, and I hope someone's got something out of what I've said. And I'll leave it there. So thanks.